For February the 7th, 2023, we talk about Farthest Frontier, barotrauma, mini motorways, and much more. Welcome to Level 446. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I am David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, David.
Hey, good to be back.
Yeah, how's it going?
It is going. I am enjoying the slow but steady return of the sun.
It has been gone. Yes. Yeah, no, I also cannot wait for the sun to fully return. I say I'm waiting for those 2 weeks of good weather we get.
Yep. It's crazy that your lizard brain every year is convinced the sun will never come back.
Yeah, it starts making weird plans with my body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, you know, next thing you know, you've got an obsidian knife and someone's heart in your hand. Yeah.
Are you not entertained, son? Yeah. So getting into anything cool?
Not too much. Slowly getting ready for Dragon Con's kind of the big thing. Mm-hmm. But, not anything big at this point.
Cool. Yeah. You got all that crafty thing. I'll get mine out of the way. I don't want to say too much because I don't think he listens, but also it'd be revealing a surprise. I'm doing a handmade like wood crafting project for my brother for his birthday.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. So what is it? I don't want to say specifically what it is.
Okay.
You know what? There's no chance that he listens to this. I'm making him a giant Jenga.
Oh, cool. Sweet.
Yeah.
Got him, Chris. See, I told you should listen. No.
He just redid like a bunch of his like outdoor space and built like a big like fire deck kind of thing. And I figured that it'd be cool. And you can buy like a big Jenga thing, but that's no fun. Also, not like none of them come with what I think it needs, which is a platform that you can level. So I built a platform with a level inside of it. So you can use little twisty legs so you can make genius. The adjustments. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And it sucks individually sanding and oiling 54 10.5-inch long 2x4 pieces.
Oh, no.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone I've heard that's into woodworking says that. To the noob trap or whatever is you never want to do something where you have to do a lot of repeated things that someone who sees it can compare.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think as a general rule, anytime you have to do something 50 times, it's probably, it gets a little bit tedious.
Yeah.
Like I've heard apparently like the thing that every wood turner tries to do and realizes is a horrible mistake is making a chess set.
Yeah, chess set. I've heard that said about like people who do rock carving as well, doing like a soapstone chess set. Yeah. Fortunately, it is really hard to mess up like literally just 10.5-inch long 2x4 blocks, you know. So that is good. It's just I've been doing them like six at a time. Out there. I got like a kerosene heater for my garage so I can actually use it during the winter. That's where my workshop is. So I've been going out there.
Yeah. So I've got ship a Theseus question for you.
Okay.
If they're 10.5 inches, are they still 2x4s?
Yeah, because the 2x4 it's not the length dimension.
Okay, that's how they get you.
Even though a 2x4 quote unquote is actually like 1.5 inches by I don't know what's 10.5 divided by 3, roughly that. It's 10.5 inches long because it needs to square up, and 10.5 inches is as long as 3 2x4 set side by side. So
how much do you love your brother? Did you make him any extras?
Ex extras? No, I didn't make him extras. It's also so easy to make extras if he wants. I don't have any scrap wood where I could I really cut it down to the bone with with that. Like, it literally got like right down to my last 8 foot piece.
Damn,
where
brave.
I was cutting them out. Yeah.
Well, look at it this way then. You've set yourself for you know, small gifts for the rest of all time. You can just top them off on Jenga pieces.
Yeah.
Now so, I want to see, what is the biggest Jenga anyone's ever done? Like,
I mean, after a certain point, it becomes fatal.
I mean, could we do Jenga with shipping containers?
It becomes Russian Jenga.
No.
Oh man, that's me. Dennis, happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you. I am old and wise now. I have entered a new age bracket.
Oh yeah.
Turned 35. So I'm now in the and up category.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we talked about it in the green room. I know you did. I know what you did. I don't want your catching up to be all about that, but what you been up to?
No, sure. Yeah. Nothing too fancy, for that. My wife's birthday is 6 days before mine.
Oh, right.
So old.
I know. I've just exited the week where I mock her mercilessly. This year, I got Barrett to go in and point at her and go, old.
Oh, no. That's going to get less funny.
Oh, no. It was very – well, it depends on who you ask. To me,
you sleep on the couch.
No, I got away with that one because it's my birthday. Gotta love me. Also, I'm young and I don't know any better.
It's been something you've been doing.
Not sure that helps your case.
Yeah.
It's something you've been doing for like for as long as the relationship has lasted,
yes.
Right?
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
It's not like a
absolutely.
New thing where you just started being like cruel out of nowhere.
No. She knew,
I mean,
in high school this is how it was going to be.
You're cruel, but there's precedent.
Dependably cruel. Yeah.
Right.
Well, so, being that our birthdays are close together, we, you know, kind of exchange gifts. And when I gave her hers, I got her tickets to see a Beatles cover band. The Fab Four is going to be in Cincinnati, and it's like the most authentic Beatles cover band, yada, yada. She's got a special place in her heart. I mean, it's the Beatles. Everyone's got a special place in their heart. But like, her parents introduced her to it and would listen to it with her. So we're going on like a double date with her parents to go see this.
Oh.
And yeah, that's what I thought. And then she opens it. She like gives a really funny look for a second. And then she's like, oh, thank you. And I'm like, what? You know, what happened?
Wait,
there?
Did you gift to the Magi each other?
Not quite. Turns out she had gotten me tickets to a Beatles event, not the same one, thank God. It's like Beatles and Bach, so it's like a symphony orchestra doing Beatles stuff.
Huh.
But just they're like 2 days apart. So random Beatles thing. And I scared the crap out of her because she thought for a second that she had gifted the Magi. But we are just gonna have a very Beatles week in early March.
Hey. That's I think that's sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a reason. Yeah. There's a reason we've been together as long as we have, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the highlight of the birthday. Mocking Jen and having funny gift stories.
In that order. Yeah.
Oh man. How about you, Ben?
Oh, not too much. I went for first run in like a month today, so I'm excited about that. I don't know if I mentioned this on air or not. I signed up to do a half marathon in October. So I'm at the beginnings of training for that. And then in exciting weird news, I cut my hair for the first time this week just to try and do it because I was indignant. Uh-huh. Like, haircut prices in Seattle are like $50. And so I always have buyer remorse each time, especially if it like doesn't turn out the way I like it. But now I can blame myself if it comes out bad. So
I have been debating when I'm going to start cutting my hair again.
It's a little tricky doing it like to yourself, but I think it turned out okay. So
yeah, I had a time when I did that as well. This is probably about 10 years ago. I think it ended up being okay because I keep it longish anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of like, oh, if I see something sticking out, I just snip it off. The thing you need to worry about, and you may not have this self-consciousness, Ben, for me, it became, okay, so I did this and I feel like I'm ready to, go get a professional one. How do I explain why my hair looks like this? Because I don't think it looks bad, but it definitely doesn't look professional. Mm-hmm. So like, and you just know that they have run into people who have cut their own hair and fucked it up, and they went in and said like, fix this. So in my head, it took me a while to get over not wanting to be that guy.
I definitely thought about that situation where it's like they see you as like a betrayal, like, oh, you thought you could do it without me, huh?
Yeah.
Just declare it was a sex thing and you get carte blanche.
So I used to cut my own hair, but that was back when I just did a number zero buzz cut.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that tends to make it much easier.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, fun experiment. Glad to at least know what it takes to do that. So
next, you need to dye your own hair.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Ugh.
What color would Ben go for?
Clear.
That's called bald.
No, it's still there. You can just, that's just clear.
Oh my god, it would be like fiber optic, and when you get an idea, it glows at the tips.
Yeah, it'd be some kind of Dr. Seuss thing.
So
Larry's not white, Larry is clear.
So my favorite turn of phrase, I knew a hairdresser that referred to self hair dyes as suicide dyes.
Ooh.
Because you died by your own hand.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, that's kind of clever. Dark, but clever.
I was going to say, like, how charming is this story going to be?
How charming is the person telling the story?
Right.
She was really pretty awesome. She was actually also a professional wrestler.
Huh.
Mm. Yeah.
What? Hi, welcome to The Level, a podcast about the barber turned or hairstylist turned professional wrestler.
Yeah, right behind Chipotle on campus, there's a barber shop that was basically the punk and like roller disco girl or roller disco roller derby girls and like kind of that sort of demographic barber shop.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that context, it was less weird.
Okay. This was on UC, by near UC's campus.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I that didn't was know one of them. Any of these things existed on UC's campus.
Oh, man. Cool. Well, that sounds like banter. I think we've got games to talk about. So why don't we go right in with the regular kind of show, but with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And let's get started with
The Grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. David, you've been away the longest, so I will throw to you.
I've got almost nothing. I've been continuing on with DMZ, just catching some games with Dennis. I don't know if we've had any particularly over the top stories. Can you think of anything?
There are so many. I can never remember who was on what. I've got one about a final exfil, but I think it was not with you in the party.
Okay, we did have the one expo where the radiation rolled in, like, right as the helicopter landed. So that was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's always a tense moment. Especially if you don't have a gas mask.
Right. Because, gas masks, famous for protecting you from radiation.
Can't hurt. Yeah.
You know, we're not going to look at that one too close, but that's the first time I've thought about that, huh?
Can you, is there a certain amount of, like, grace time that you can survive?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so your health starts ticking down. Also, I don't know quite what the rule is, but generally if that happens, there's actually gas masks in the helicopter.
Okay.
But the my understanding is the problem is it won't actually come to an area that is already irradiated. So if you cut it too close, apparently they'll sometimes just be like, nope, gotta find somewhere else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's you call the chopper, and then there's a waiting period until the chopper actually spawns on the map, but it spawns, you know, a ways out and flies in. And then, you know, it lands and takes off with you. If the radiation reaches you before the chopper spawns, it will not spawn. And you have to go to the next area. So yeah, there's some real, and it's like, you know, the game of like, all right, do I stick this and waste time waiting for the chopper to show up, especially knowing that the radiation is right on top of me, or do I just start running for final exfil now?
Mm.
Yeah. Also they've announced the new season starts on the 15th, and they've announced a ton of changes. Everyone spawns with the full armor, which makes the game much, for lack of a better word, I want to say balanced. I don't necessarily mean in terms of like a fairness thing, but more in terms, I guess, more consistent.
More time to react, right? The time to kill is like doubled or something, right? When you've got,
and so armor. So it's a thing where like going on a run where you start with all armor because you got it from the last run versus one where you don't have it is a dramatic difference in like difficulty. Mm. So they're also apparently toning down some of the AI to make it a little bit more easy. But I bring that up because I'd argue a lot of the difficulty isn't so much raw difficulty so much as it is inconsistent difficulty. So for example, on the chopper extraction, sometimes you'll have a thing where you'll call it in and just, you know, no one shows up and you just sit there and wait for it to come and hop on. Other times you have, you know, where there's just full on invasion of, you know, waves of enemies trying to kill you before the chopper can get there. So it's, yeah, you know, just very inconsistent.
Yeah. You can do a little prediction of it by area, but there's not a good formula that I've found to like know what you're going to get.
Yeah. It also seems like, I'm assuming this is a bug, but it seems like right now, distance isn't calculated quite correctly for shotguns when the NPCs use them, because they can definitely snipe you with a shotgun.
Really?
That's not how that works.
Yeah, I mean, luckily shotguns are kind of underpowered in this game, so like they generally can't one-shot you, but it's still kind of frustrating when like a guy on a rooftop across the street is just, you know, bullseyeing you.
Yeah.
So
that would be frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, so it's a good game, but there is jank.
Hey, you know what? Mastering the jank is just a part of it.
Right.
Which kind of makes me sad that they're going to change the jank now that I know the jank. Like,
yeah, this is my jank. Really don't touch it. They don't overcorrect. My big fear on this game in general is that they give in to the edgelords and do what the cycle did and just make it PvP focused.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's my biggest fear, is that they take out all the, you know, interesting stuff.
Mm.
Other than that, I found out that the game apparently has some sort of marketing deal with Hummer. That there's a whole bunch of electric Hummers all over the all over this like impoverished third world city.
Yes.
Cool.
It's, yeah, there was also a commercial, a TV commercial where they, you know, Super Troopers and a GE Hummer were dropped out of the back of a cargo plane, as if that was how you would go into a mission.
The Super Troopers from the film, from the comedy movies.
It was a really weird crossover, three-way crossover, Modern Warfare, Super Troopers, and GMC.
What year is this?
Yeah.
No, just your operators or whatever. And it, yeah, just the implication that, hey, you want to buy this because it will give you a tactical advantage because it's silent, I guess, was the implication.
Which, I mean, is a legitimate, like, consideration.
If you want to run over blind people.
To be fair, running people over in this game is a big part of it, although presumably they are not blind.
Okay.
Well, biologically. You know,
let's not
jump to any conclusions.
That's
yeah. True.
Actually, but, no, by the way, they can target you from a mile away. All of them have like superhuman sight.
That or they're all daredevil. I mean,
could be. Yeah.
Yeah. They, for some reason that I'm sure has nothing to do with them being given money. They do not model the fact that like shooting a battery is a great way to have fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can also fill it up at all the regular gas stations.
Yes, and then so this weirdly, third world nation has a charging infrastructure.
They have a better electric grid than we do. Yeah.
Yep. Some places anyway. And that I can tell, I don't think that the battery like lasts any longer than a tank of gas. Weirdly. So I'm guessing that was like a balance concession. But yeah, it's just an odd thing to have in the game. They took the money and ran.
Yeah, I mean, the one I do like is that there's at least one where it's straight up, like, you go to a shopping mall where they have, you know, how malls will have, like, the cars, you know, on display as advertisements in the middle of the mall, and you can just, like, hop in and drive off the pedestal.
Mm-hmm. This just reminds me of, like, the movie industry where it's, like, you watch, like, an Adam Sandler movie, and it's like, oh, wow, you really needed this much money that you're going to have, like, these commercials and all these different scenes for, like, Dunkin' Donuts or whatever, and it's like...
Yeah.
I mean, it's better choice. Than... Was it one of the old Call of Duty games or Battlefield where you could straight up, like, buy your weapon, like, buy the AR-15 that you've customized or whatever?
That feels like a Battlefield thing.
Are you talking about, like, buying an actual gun?
Yeah.
That like, sounds like an American thing.
Yeah, like, I'm trying to think. I know the Division 2 had a number of, the body armor companies and stuff like that were actual companies, things like that. But it continues to be fun. I still have no idea why I'm killing all of these people. You know, no context for that.
They're there.
Just do what you're told, David. Chain of command.
Except that there's explicitly isn't any chain of command.
Like, it's a one ring chain of command, okay?
Like I think they justify something that like what, it's off the books, and that's why I spend most of my time just like breaking into people's homes and stealing their stereos.
Yeah, it is. It is kind of explicitly like a mercenary thing. And it's like, okay, this is even less noble. You're going to give me not just no motivation, but negative motivation.
Right.
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah, I just love that. Like, literally, you spend more time stealing people's stuff than you do, you know, shooting at people.
I have a possible... forfeiture. A possible segue, if that's is it, that truly is everything.
I'm interested to hear
what
that is.
I didn't know they are adding segues.
that is it now. No, so I with all the changes happening to DMZ, they're also going to have a track of missions that is exclusively for people who own the base game, which got me to pull the trigger and buy the base game. So I started playing the campaign of Modern Warfare.
Okay.
And they do as much to address ethical concerns there as they do in DMZ. I can report.
So not at all.
So well, there's bad guys that have missiles, and you just kill incredible amounts of people in all manner of places around the globe in order to get the missiles
or hide on the sniper levels.
Yeah, or you know, do whatever thing. So, story standpoint, there's not a lot there. There's intrigue around like apparently the missile dealer, it's American Missile Systems, and so not only do you have to stop the missiles, you got to figure out how that happened, yada yada.
Because that's clearly a job for the military as opposed to like the FBI.
Yeah, there's that. I mean, it's international, like the weapons dealers in Iran. So I don't know how that all works. But it's like, you know, already my prediction is that, well, the one other character that they've introduced that could potentially have some kind of reason, or could potentially, you know, pose as a good bad guy. Like, it's got to be the one, right? Like, it's got to be the bad guy. Mm. But we'll see.
It's a little forward looking for them to make the bad guy an arms dealer.
Well, and not just that. My prediction is actually like a guy in the U.S. military, the guy like calling stuff. There was just some stuff. I mean, I don't feel bad about spoiling anything because this is all conjecture on my part. But there was some stuff early on where like he's really aggressive about them destroying the missile systems instead of bringing them in. And I'm just like, well, that screams you're the bad guy and you're trying to cover your tracks. So yeah.
Except the problem with like, oh, this is a little progressive is that where they, at least in the past, and like their justification for the multiplayer games and stuff in the past has been that happens. And then they're like, so the solution is mercenaries.
Right.
Like, yeah.
The government is corrupt. Therefore, let's privatize war.
Yeah, let's make this even more unaccountable. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that, you know, their story is no great shakes. I don't know. I cracked on Halo Infinite pretty hard for having just the dumb kill everything hero. And then apparently I still haven't gotten there in the campaign, but apparently like they actually do go on to like comment on that. But I'm holding no expectation that the game tries to wrestle with that sort of thing in any meaningful way.
Do you torture anyone in this one?
Well, okay, so maybe a trigger warning for gendered violence. There's just some stuff, even in the first mission, that I guess they're trying to be cool or show you how war really is or whatever. So you're raiding this base where the missiles are hidden, right, to get them back, and it's very heavily defended. And you're, you know, clearing your way through the building, and as like a military sim and playing a, you know, a war movie, like there's nothing better. The game does it incredibly well, but you're clearing through the house. You burst into this room where, you know, you've shot through the door or something. And there's a dead, you know, enemy on the ground. And there's a woman like crying over him, like losing her shit because someone meaningful to her has just been killed in front of her. And it was like this, oh my God, moment, like that's horrifying. And then she turns around and pulls a pistol on you and you have to shoot her.
Mm.
And it's like, you know, it's not commented on.
Yeah.
It's like, what was a very, like, it's a moment that stood out to me is like, man, that's really jarring. That, like, as me, a person now, you know, going to the no Russian scene and all that stuff, it felt like they were going for that, but I don't have any faith that they're going to do anything with that or have your characters wrestle with that in any meaningful way, or
right,
you know, it's all to show what badass stone cold operators these are that can't be shaken by anything and are committed to the job, I guess. And you know, that's all I'm going to expect from it. But you know, as a human being, that's kind of hard to wrestle with. And I almost, you know, I don't know how I would ask a game to deal with that in a genuine way, without asking it to be a different kind of game, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm here to run through halls and shoot stuff. Is it truly a binary? Like, you either do that and then make the game about that, like, you know, deal with it, like let's talk about it, or do you just have to exclude it? Can you do it and not comment on it like they did in a passable way?
I suppose one answer to that might be you've kind of got the Batman problem of like, if you're going to make the game enough of a power fantasy that your just gratuitously skilled operator could have easily disarmed her, then it becomes questionable that you don't. On the other hand, you could always, you know, make the game realistic and, you know, you have to shoot her, but then you don't really have the power fantasy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a weird trade-off to have to make. Yeah. And there were a couple of things like that where you go into a room or whatever, and there's someone that's wounded, but not down yet. And I waited every time, and every time they pulled a gun on me. And so it's like, okay.
Yeah, I'd love to see more games do the America's Army thing, honestly.
Where you go to jail.
Yeah, where you go to jail if you finish off a downed opponent.
Interesting. I've never heard of that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it's like, I think it's like, yeah, do this. And like after the mission, you have to spend 20 minutes just staring at the screen before you can play again.
Or you turn it off and then come back in.
Yeah, I don't know if they did it real time or what, but anyways. But yeah, that has also bothered me when you blatantly finish people off in the like DMZ mode.
Yeah, there's the structure in Battle Royale and now exfil shooters, I guess, of, you know, you get knocked and then you get taken all the way out as like a universal system has really desensitized you to the idea of finishing off someone who's otherwise helpless.
Yeah. It also doesn't work real well in a shooter because that just means you hold your finger on the trigger for 0.1 seconds longer.
Yeah, there's some weirdness there. Like, I maybe someone with a better tactical mind than me would be like, no, leave them so their teammates have to come out for them, which, again, gets super weird. Like, that's worse. That's not better. Or, like, you know, if I stop firing, make sure there is clear first. Then I have more bullets in my magazine if someone else jumps on me. I don't know. It's, you know, it's one of those things where what makes a fun game from a play standpoint leads you to some places from it, you know, as you're playing out the theme that if it happened in real life would be kind of horrifying. But that's, I mean, there are so many places where that's like that, you know. Pokemon, you're having pets fight each other?
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not going to take that to, you know, too much to heart. It was just, you know, it was a very jarring scene. They put a lot of intention into making sure you saw this woman crying over someone that you shot and then you had to shoot her. I want that to go somewhere if you're going to put that much effort into it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so turning from the bummer stuff, I guess, you know, when you're shooting people that you don't feel bad about killing, Modern Warfare does what it does incredibly well. This is probably the most next gen-y game that I've played on my new PC. And the single player ratchets up the graphics even from where you get in multiplayer, another level. And it's just really cool to experience. You know, the first level proper is at night, and you're kind of clearing through houses, going into the dark, into the light, putting night vision goggles on and off. You have close air support, and that's all going on. You're, you know, hiding in a downed helicopter, shooting at people, snipers in the tree line. And there's like, you know, fire and smoke, and you're just seeing shadows moving. And it's just all really, really cool. So that, you know, from that kind of combat experience thing, like I said, I don't think there's anything that parallels this or can match this, I should say. And they do it really well. I had a thought and I lost it.
What was the last mission you played in the game?
I started the Amsterdam mission.
Okay.
So the thing that frustrates me about this is the fact that there are no physical releases for this. So you can't buy it used and therefore the price never goes down. Like they still want $70 for this.
It'll go down eventually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything price drops down here.
Yeah. hey David, I can hear your phone in the background.
Oh, I'm sorry. I actually don't know how to turn it off. Sorry, I threw it away.
Sometimes the simplest solution is the best solution.
Yeah,
but I hit it with a hammer.
But I can still hear it.
Yeah, let me know if I did not throw it far enough.
Okay.
I'm sorry. iPhones have, I think, the worst user interface of any phone I've ever seen, at least in terms of like volume control and turning them off and stuff like that.
There's a little switch on the side.
There's a little switch on the left side, most likely.
Is this your work phone?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Doc. Right above the volume controls on the side, there's a silent switch.
I'm leaving all this in.
Huh. I didn't know that's what that did.
Yeah, that puts it on vibrate.
Okay, that would made life easier.
David, I am laughing at you.
I'm laughing with Dennis at you.
I'm just laughing.
I found my thought. So one thing that surprised me in the main game, the campaign, is they don't show like a visual indicator around your reticle of when you do damage or when you get a kill. And that's obviously something in multiplayer that you pay a lot of attention to because you want to know when you hit someone and they go down. Mm-hmm. And I totally understand why they took it out for the campaign since they're going for realism and immersion, yada, yada, yada. But it just felt weird shooting people and not getting the like, you know, a little red thump that yeah. tells you you did good. I need my dopamine people. Tell me I did good. Yeah. So that's that I'm fairly early in it. And it's interesting to see the, you know, the game proper, I guess, and we'll see where it goes.
Nice. Yeah, I don't have an awful lot of questions about it just because, I mean, I don't know, like the way in which a Call of Duty game can succeed is their spectacle. And the answer is always, sure. Mm-hmm. You know, so like I kind of feel like that, like my only meaningful question is answered to a degree.
Yeah, set piece to set piece all the way through.
Yeah,
I will say the level I'm in now, they're trying to do like a stealth thing. And like, don't guys stop. Just if your game is not entirely dedicated to stealth.
Yeah.
And you have a really good fun system around it. Don't do stealth sections.
I mean, I guess that goes back to something else, which is like there's something about this, just like the pure military shooter kind of thing that does feel like it is trapped in a different time. And like also from a different time is just the stealth level.
Yeah.
So I feel like some of the Call of Duty games have done good stealth levels, but usually it's by making the stealth just be like, the set piece is like the rule is that no one hears you, not because you're actually being stealthy, but because in the fiction of the game, you're a super stealthy operator.
Yeah. You have silencers now. You're stealthy.
Right.
All gillied up where you're hiding in the grass. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's funny for a series that is so willing to use just gratuitous set pieces to not do stuff like that is even weirder.
Yeah. So yeah, that's Modern Warfare 2. And I'm excited for more DMZ goodness. That's why I bought the game, but I'll enjoy the campaign too. Probably going as far tonally as possible in the opposite direction though. I also started playing Mini Motorways on my phone.
Nice. This
is the sequel to Mini Metro.
Oh, that's why I recognize this. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So same concept where it's a very minimalized visualization of a city. In Mini Metro, it's just like a rail line, like you would see a rail chart on a subway. Mm-hmm. And in Mini Motorways, it's just like a grid for roads to go on, like a very abstracted map. And you know, houses and factories will start popping up on it. Of different colors, and you draw roadways between them. And you know, as you draw that, the cars will go. You kind of naturally wind up creating intersections and different paths and everything. And the goal is to be like the civil engineer to keep everything flowing smoothly as the number of houses and factories and colors all just skyrocket over time. Yeah.
Do you have to like put highways to separate the minority neighborhoods from the white neighborhoods?
It's redlining.
Yeah, oof. No.
Rough chuckles.
Yeah, again, the game probably is not thinking about it on that level. Although in this one, I feel like it's a little more acceptable than in the last one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you know, every week, you know, time kind of ticks by, maybe a minute per week. If you're in the fast forward mode, every week you will get the option. You'll get more road tiles because your city is expanding, and then you'll get an option between one of two special tiles. What I've seen so far is a roundabout, stoplights, and bridges and motorways, or highways, essentially. So the highway, you can just draw a road point to point that goes over anything, whereas all other roads have to kind of, you know, not be on the same space. The motorway is like your cheat to get across stuff that you've already penciled in. However, everything is penciled in that you can erase it at any time. And it's got the same really cool way of doing redrawing that was in Mini Metro, where when you erase something, there's kind of a ghost of that road left behind. And until you kind of connect and draw the new way, cars will continue to go on that ghost road. And that
lost highway, if you will.
So you know, everything keeps on running, and you don't have to spend any time in pause if you don't want to. You can kind of redraw things on the fly, and that's all very slick visually in a game that is already very minimalist.
Yeah. So
go ahead.
In Mini Metro, your fail condition is if too many people were stuck at a station waiting to be picked up. When train cars are full, trying to get to their way. And this is the fail condition if there's like too much backup, you know, like just if any one car is stuck for too long.
Yep. Every car, when it leaves the house that it starts from, has a destination in mind, a specific factory that it's going to. And if it takes too long for that car to get there, it will fail you.
Gotcha.
And so you know, as factories get bigger, they take more orders at once, meaning the queues outside of them get longer, and it all it kind of devolves in the same way of that Mini Metro does. Mm-hmm. And that's almost like my one complaint is the end of the game always feels like resigning yourself to death. You know, like everything's getting a little too complex, and I don't see any obvious way to fix it, so I guess I'll just let time run instead of trying to move stuff around. Go ahead.
This is these games I've not played. This one, but Mini Metro is a very apt, let's say, metaphor, you know, gameplay metaphor for technical debt.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. but every time I've lost, it felt like I spent the last 30 seconds just staring at the like warning light going, yeah, there's no way. Like it doesn't have that end game where you're like frantically like, oh, I can just keep it going. I can just keep it going. There's very much an anticlimax.
Yeah. It's like high score based, right? There's not like a win condition.
Yep. It's just how many completed trips can you get? And so that is funny. So I think you get an award at 300 trips completed and 1,000 trips completed. And there was one game where, you know, I got to that point of like, all right, I'm done with this one. Let it run. And then I realized I was like at 984. Like, oh no. And then like, I couldn't do anything. You're not going to redraw your entire grid system in 10 seconds, but it was like just watching that number go up as the end, it was drawing near. And, I wound up failing it by like 2 cars or something. Mm. So maybe I should have tryharded all the way through. I don't know. But it really, like, you're playing it for the experience. It's fun to just look at a map of stuff and go, oh, I see how this can kind of fit together. And it's like Zen gardening almost. Like you're there for the journey, not the end. So that's I kind of give it a pass on that. It is funny though. It did take me 3 levels to realize when a house spawns on the map, it spawns with a driveway pointing in a random cardinal direction.
Oh yeah.
And it took 3 levels for me to realize, oh, actually I can change what that direction is. I don't have to build off of that. And so my maps got so much better.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Cause you don't have to have like weird little alleys going around.
Yeah. Like I was drawing a Dr. Seussian neighborhood where every driveway was a little squiggle pattern. That improved my game a lot. And I also, it's funny, you kind of learn the language of it. So you kind of see like, oh, okay. Like color houses are probably going to pop up together and form little neighborhoods. Yeah. And you know, the first couple of factory spawns will try to force me to do like an intersection. And so I can, you know, plan around that. And you know, learning the language of that, like with any puzzle game, is fun. But there's also something really fun about using your roads to protect space. So, like I said, you can delete and redraw roads at a whim. And I'm going to share a picture into the Slack here of what that's led me to do. Because as I'm planning, I like, okay, you know, I don't want anything to spawn in this area. That would be really bad. Mm-hmm. And so I just draw a road in it, you know, and hold that space. And so I've uploaded the picture, like, you know, I want to keep the riverbanks clear. And so I'll draw roads along the riverbanks, and I want to make sure that I can get a piece of this roundabout out to the bottom left of the map, because I think stuff will spawn out there. Yeah. And then I really don't want any houses popping up between these two factories. And so I literally just drew like a zigzag road, like a that squiggle. Touched every Yeah.
Defensive so. Urban planning.
Yeah. So we're back to redlining.
Yeah, basically. Oh man. So that feels a little meta. And I wonder how much they designed the game assuming people would do that, because there are maps where I feel like I don't have nearly enough tiles to go around. Mm-hmm. And then there's maps where I have enough to do, you know, the octopus that I just sent you guys, that's all these roads being placeholders. Yeah. Every like there's a bunch of different cities that it happens in, and every city like kind of has its own thing. Mm-hmm. You know, basically it's the way rivers are laid out every time.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is real fun Zen game to have on your phone. It does take a little bit longer of an investment than I would like, or than I would like. It, you know, games are probably 10 minutes ish long. Mm-hmm. So this is a bathroom break game, not a waiting in line game.
Yeah,
in my estimation.
It's a different game, but I shared kind of my favorite version of this. Which is a game called Freeways. That's made by the same person. I believe it's just a person.
Oh, very cool.
Who does desert golfing and golf on Mars. Okay. That is, it's made for phone. You can get this on iPhone. I just linked the PC one because it's easier to link so you can see. But it is about drawing highway interchanges and simulating the traffic on them.
Oh, them. Hell yeah.
So you can test your like throughput, and like it's you're not really worrying about like where they're coming from or where they're going to. Like you're just basically making a big grid of highway interchanges. Mm-hmm. But it is saying like, OK, this is, you know, Highway 17 going this direction. This is Highway 17 going the other direction. Make this connect while also connecting these other highways that are here. No notes. Figure it out. And you do end up with very strange solutions that would never actually happen in real life, mm-hmm. in order to account for the AI of the cars. This would be a fun one to stream, actually, if I was still doing daytime streams.
So there's actually, I have to track it down. Someone made a plugin or something for Google Maps where you can actually like reroute actual roads to try to figure out. Hmm. The thing, I think it's something. I think it's something where you can like, you know, maybe like click on the intersections to modify them or something. I'll have to track that down.
Huh.
Yes, indeed.
Many motorways.
This looks like it has a very similar vibe.
Yeah.
And that's what I've been playing this week.
Nice. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, just got two this week. The first one, I'll talk about Days Gone. I did finish it today. So I think I'd been trying to do that the past week. Kind of ends the same way that it ran the entire time. Story is not that interesting. Gameplay is not bad. You kind of unlock like a third area, and you unlock like a third tier of weapons. And then you can like kind of functionally kill the hordes of zombies with that. Hmm. So they give you some nice like quality of life improvements. But after that, it's, you know, after you beat the game proper, there's not as much to do as I might like. I mean, you can explore the area and you just have the open world game, and the open world's not bad to it. Like that's the strongest part of this game, is just kind of like riding around and searching for stuff and doing random things. So that part's fine, I guess. But by the end of the game, I was basically treating it like Midnight Suns, where I was just like skipping through the cinematics and just grinding through the missions. So Yeah, I think I posted a link a bit ago in the backstage, but it was like a link from a streamer where he's saying that how Midnight Suns has like fundamentally changed how he plays games. He just skips through cutscenes now. I feel like that might be the same for me now as well. but yeah, the game itself, again, the open world part's cool. It kind of reminds me, it has this like weird similarity to like Grand Theft Auto, where it's like the way that the fact that the map is like three stages, the kind of makeup of the game of like how you go from person to person, just do these odd jobs or whatever. It kind of feels like it was inspired by the original like GTA 3. And it feels like it has similar DNA to that, even though it's set completely differently and the characters are completely different.
Does it feel conflicted, like between how much it wants to be like an Uncharted alike and how much it wants to be a GTA 3 alike?
I don't know. I haven't read enough by the game company of like what they think about their game, so it's hard to tell. I guess like I know what Cole mentioned of like the studio being like, people weren't ready for this like white male character protagonist or whatever. And like if that's their opinion, then I think they're kind of tone deaf or do not understand how people playing the game would like interpret it, I guess. There's like a lot of dumb dialogue like scattered throughout the game where it's just like, okay, whatever. Anyway, I don't know. It does not have any of the charm that something like GTA does in terms of like the likability of their characters. The game certainly is very pretty though. The open world part again is really, really cool. The things that you can do in the world is a little bit limited. It's maybe down to like 3 to 5 different types of things you can do, like hostage, killing horde, that types of thing.
Yeah.
So in that sense, like the world does feel a little static where it's mostly just the, you know, kind of what they've laid out, but it doesn't feel as kind of like there's a lot of fleshed out things to do there. But yeah, I don't know. Overall, like shrug. It's if you're feeling like an open world game, this might scratch the itch for you. Just don't expect anything too much from the narrative part of it, I guess.
Was this free on PlayStation Plus or something?
It was on sale. I picked it up for like, I think it's normally only like 15 or 16 on PlayStation, or maybe that was the sale price, but I can't remember. It's one of those two. So I think it's relatively cheap now since it came out like 2 years ago. But yeah. Yeah, certainly if it's free, then you have no downside of giving it a go.
Wait, did you buy a purely digital copy?
Yeah, yep.
Then it was still $70, right?
No, it was on sale. It's an old game. Even the PlayStation Store has sales.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't have anything else to say about the game unless there's any questions.
No, it sounds like, I mean, what you're saying sounds about right based on what I heard about it, just in terms of like a, you know, variety problem and, you know,
yeah,
basically finding ways to justify using the Horde technology.
Yeah, that's the one mechanic they really got right. But yeah, you gotta figure more stuff out to make a game.
Yeah.
But, all right, yeah, I'll talk about the second game that I got, which is a much more interesting one. It's, I played Barrow Trauma. Have you guys heard of this game?
No.
This is the underwater, like, dungeon crawler kind of game?
Perhaps.
The Subnautica-like.
I don't think any of these descriptions are 100% accurate. But
I'm thinking of a different game.
Okay.
Go ahead. I apologize.
I know what I'm thinking of. I'm just trying to troll Ben.
You're throwing me off the scent of my reality. It's like a 2D co-op type game that's putting you on a sub. Everybody has different roles. It's kind of like a weird like cat lady like veneer on top of like an Among Us kind of gameplay, kind of, but then there's like cosmic horror stuff in it as well, so like Iron Lung mixed in there. But it's a 2D game. It's supposed to be multiplayer, I think, and each person has a different role that is very distinct from one another, and you have your own like unique responsibilities that you're committed to. So some of the roles, there's a captain, there's a medbay person, there's a security officer, there's an engineer, a mechanic. There's a decent diversity of roles. But for each role, you have like specific skills that only you can do. And you have like a specific area of the ship that's kind of like your main room that you kind of are responsible for. So as an example, if you're the captain, you steer the submarine. So you kind of have like a mini map that you're looking at and you kind of choose which direction it goes in. If you're the engineer, you're in charge of maintaining the engine of the ship. You have like a nuclear reactor. And you're like the person who at the beginning of the game has all these like nuclear cores that you can start up the reactor with. Before you do that, the ship's completely dark and no one can really see what they're doing. The security officer not only can man the guns of the submarine to like fight off monsters, but they also have guns themselves. Because one mechanic of the game is there might be a betrayer amongst the people who are just trying to like sabotage your efforts. So one of the things the security officer can do is shoot a person, or they have handcuffs. And so they can handcuff a person and then the person can functionally not do anything. They can climb up ladders, but they can't like interact with anything anymore. And so it's this weird thing where, like, as you're driving the submarine around, like, you can start getting leaks in the sub. You can get attacked by monsters. And you kind of have to manage all of this, where a room can fill up with water. You have, like, swimsuits and swim masks on the ship. So you have to, like, open the door, deal with the flooding of the water, get in there, activate a pump to get the water out, and then, like, lock it down so it doesn't stop flooding the other rooms. And then eventually you start going to these like points of interest where everybody swims out of the sub and then swims into like, say, like a down submarine. And then that's where it gets into more like Lovecraftian type horror where, okay, why did the submarine, why is it downed? Oh, there's a bunch of monsters there. Okay, so we have to try and shoot them and kill them and like figure stuff out. There's also some kind of like universal skills. So I think I mentioned before, everyone has like a kind of like a wetsuit that they can get at any time. Everybody has access to like a welder so they can try and weld leaks on the ship if there's like a leak. But certain things are kind of bespoke where the med officer has like specific medicines that they can apply to people based on what the injury type is. But in our situation, if the person playing the med officer isn't nice to you, you can just go steal morphine out of the med bay and just use that and develop a little bit of addiction. No problem.
How does addiction manifest mechanically? Is it,
All I know is I had plenty of morphine, so I was good to go. I was still riding that high, and it made me feel great. When I didn't have the morphine, I was hurting. I had like lacerations, stuff like that. With the morphine, no problems. So the game gets like it has a lot of kind of like deep details of gameplay. It's like we each had to go through a tutorial to figure out how to play our own character at the beginning of the game. But because we try to run first, like not knowing how the game operated.
Oh no.
And yeah, failed pretty quickly. I handcuffed myself as the security officer. And so when a room floods, I have to cry out for help. Like, hey, somebody open this top hatch. And they have to literally pick me up and drag me out of the room that's flooded or I will drown.
Could they like take the key off your belt and help you? Or were you?
Oh, no. I think once you're handcuffed, I did not see a key anywhere. So once you're handcuffed, you're kind of locked into that.
Oh, look, no. You got to be really smart about your inventory on a sub, and we don't have room for everything. Okay.
So this is like a weird game. It's kind of jank, but it's still in early access. But it was a pretty fun time playing with four friends, and you know, just trying to figure out how the game works.
Did you mention that you're also technically on one of the moons of like Jupiter or something?
Yeah, that's probably true. It's probably Europa, maybe. Yeah, that might be the ocean one.
You're on Europa.
I think it was mentioned, but I had forgotten that until you reminded me. So that's how impactful that is, I guess.
Is there a is there always an imposter?
I don't think there has to be. And when it was the first time playing, I think the person who was the imposter didn't even know they're the imposter. So it's kind of like weirdly implemented, but maybe I'll find out more if I ever myself become the imposter.
This game looks like it owns. The only thing that scares me off of it is the fact that it is co-op like that.
Yeah, this would be a good like Duckstream event, I think, sort of thing. Yeah. It's, but again, it's like crazy complicated in certain facets of it. Like with the engineer, they give you an entire wiring system where it's like when you go up to joints, like you can like wire up the power from one place to another place, and it's like, yeah, it's like they have all these like circuits for like input in, input out, power in, power out, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's very daunting.
I don't have to learn a trade to play a game.
Yeah, it had smacks of like Rust to it, where it's like, oh, I'm literally learning electrical engineering to set up power for our base. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's, but I don't know, but it's cool. Like it's something to master, so that part's kind of cool. But yeah.
What I'm watching is, I assume the pilot here steering the sub really gives me vibes of Cole. What was that submarine horror game where you couldn't see the world around you? You just had to rely on your sensors.
Iron Lung. Yeah. Ben name checked it earlier.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Got it. Yes. That's very strong, especially if you're the pilot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, and there, like, there's a little bit of Subnautica in this, insofar as like navigating that ship through tight spaces seems really tough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's it has good atmosphere where it's a lot of dread and a lot of feeling like you're trapped on a submarine, because you are. So
yeah.
Funny how that works.
Yeah. Huh. So I think I'll be playing this again tomorrow night. So I'm excited to dip my toe back into it.
Nice. Glad to hear it's cool. Yeah. Did you have anything else?
That's all I got.
Cool. I have just been playing more Farthest Frontier.
Oh, we gotcha, huh?
Yeah, it got me. I so for David's sake, this is it's a colony builder where you're playing as medieval folks who have set out from your kingdom to set up a new settlement out in the wilderness. I talked about it last week, and I had mentioned that I was rolling it on the easiest difficulty. And I kind of hit a point where I had accumulated a lot of mistakes as I went to kind of like the middle level of complexity for my colony. Like your town center has three levels of upgrade, and like the basic level of upgrade is like, you know, thatched roof cottages and dirt roads and stuff. And then in the next level, it gets really like a lot more complicated. That's where you start getting like the ability to make soap shops in order to keep people's hygiene up, to make them, you know, not as sick.
Do you put them next to the liposuction clinics?
No, Tyler Durden. yeah, like just it adds complexity to the way that you're. To the way that your food supply is handled specifically, but also, I just ended up like getting a lot of mistakes, and also playing it on easy. There wasn't enough like inclement scenarios for me to feel like there was that good Frostpunk. This is a combination city builder / survival game. Kind of thing that I wanted was, so I bumped up to the medium difficulty and started a new colony, and was feeling like it was a little bit easy there as well. Up until recently here, but like one of the things that changes that was a problem that I had to deal with is wildlife gets way more aggressive. For the first four years that the colony was there, and a year of in-game time is like a half hour, something like that. Mm-hmm. You go through all the seasons and that cycles back around. But for the first 4 years, we had a boar problem. scratch that. We had a problem boar.
Singular.
The place where I chose to build was next to, I didn't know this when I put it down, was just next to a place where a boar was. And that boar would make incursions into the town, rough people up, nearly kill them, destroy some houses and take some food and then run away. And your peasants will do like a little bit to fight, but like if they take one hit, they're going to run and get back into their houses, or they're going to go to the go back to the city town center, right? And early on, you really only have one hunter. you know, and you're sending them out to like look for deer and stuff because personnel is super limited. And because of the variety of different kind of professions in this, when you build when you build a new building, somebody is taken out of the labor pool and then assigned to that. So you got to be real careful with the way you do it. You don't have an awful lot of like defense at the start, and early on, you're not really doing a lot with like guards like you will later on. So yeah, we were just plunking away at this boar every time he came in, and he come back in a little bit more healed up, and it took 4 years for us to be able to stop this fucker.
who landed the final blow?
At least you weren't
bored. way too many people got bored by this guy. I didn't name him, and I didn't keep track of who the hero of my who the hero of Frostvale was.
Oh, War Slayer.
Have you tried Dwarf Fortress?
Dwarf Fortress is on my list of ones to play like this. I know they have
when you want to disappear for a week.
Yeah, that has been a little bit of it. Like this one had spoken to me specifically as a Frostpunk alike, more so than Dwarf Fortresses. But that is very much on my list with its new release. Yeah. So dealt with them, and I've actually so another thing that happens is in my first game, raiders didn't come by, and now raiders are coming by. Not that hard to deal with as long as you can get to a point where you can build guard towers. They're pretty easy to deal with, and people will be more willing to fight raiders than they will a wild animal.
That's funny.
Interesting.
Yeah. That was good. The thing that I ended up running into is around, I think like year seven, something around there. I had gotten to like the second level of town development, and then I saw like a bunch of little icons appear over some of the houses. And I was like, all right, so what's this? That doesn't look good. I moused over and they said, hey, there's a hygiene issue. If you don't build a compost center, then people are going to start getting sick. So these cretins had spent 4 to 7 years just shitting where they stood in their houses.
Oh, no.
I mean, they're afraid to go outside because of the boar.
Well, yeah. So it's like, all right, I guess I'll build. And you know, shame on me because like I didn't look at the description of the compost because I hadn't gotten into a lot of farming. I was sufficing pretty well. Like my food supply was actually pretty good on foraging and hunting, you know. Eventually got to the point where people started getting scurvy, which was bad. On the description, it's like, yeah, no, they make compost, but the primary way they do this is by getting night soil. And night soil is a fun Victorian term for people who go around and get the human waste from folks. So
see, that's actually a really, really bad idea.
It's a terrible idea. That's why it never occurred to me that those two things would be connected. Yeah, so that got solved, but I did lose a few people to cholera on that, which is bad. I may have scuppered the colony a little bit. So if you do not increase the desirability of plots of land fast enough, eventually the houses will start going abandoned. And this seems weird because, all right, they're going to abandon the house, and maybe they're going to do that right when winter is coming, and then they're going to complain about a housing shortage when there's a house there that nobody's in. They're going to get sick, and then I can't build new houses fast enough in more desirable places, and so they eventually start leaving, causing my labor crunch to worsen. I don't know if I'm going to be able to recover from that, because as my labor pool leaves, I don't have people to build new stuff, and my tax base is crumbling. So, yeah, it was my problem though, because like that a huge thing in Frostpunk is you know you don't want to grow too fast. Like it's not an unalloyed good when it gives you the prompt and says, "Hey, 11 people want to come to your place." It's not always good to just say yes to that. Because you need to have stuff ready for them. I thought that I had enough houses, like by the numbers, I could house all of them, but I just I didn't I guess I didn't stop to think that maybe there was a like a surplus housing you needed to have for stuff like that.
Frostpunk, you know, also gives you a body pit if you make a mistake. So
yes,
hey, Roller Coaster Tycoon, you can do the same thing.
Yeah, you can build a death coaster. Pool. You can you can put them on you can put on Mr. Bones' Wild Ride. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So got some problems on my current colony. I may go back and try and fix it, or this may be the point where I decide to say, yeah, I'll come back when this is further out of early release. But Furthest Frontier has been a real good time.
That's sweet.
Yeah, got a couple other city builders I want to check out. Obviously there's Dwarf Fortress in that. I picked up like a big, like complete version of Anno 1800. I don't know. I'm just going to lean into being this kind of monster for a little while.
Yeah.
Simulation addict.
Yes.
I mean, if you think about it, you know, life is a simulation. So
some would argue.
Yeah. I mean, that's what Musk says, and he's not wrong about anything.
Yeah, no, he hasn't fucked up anything that I care about or spend a lot of time on, so that's good. Any questions about Furthest Frontier?
No, it looks cool. You make me want to play it.
It's good. It's a good game.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis, what did you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I've got AI on the brain. So since that seems to be showing up everywhere, I wanted to talk about how it might show up in games. So, what new and interesting ways do you hope AI will be used in gaming? That is, of course, you know, before the inevitable AI singularity.
Yeah. I'll get started here. Callum says, for more complex/nuanced dynamic difficulty tuning.
Yeah, yeah, I think that makes sense.
In a way, like, yeah, the player's success or failure is a, you know, that is what do you call it when people it's training data. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. David, what does Ollie say?
Lee says, I want to see a game like Dark Souls or Elden Ring learn from us. The loop is the same: beat bad guys, get boss, get wrecked, repeat till you learn the boss's moveset. You gotta win, but tell people you did it easy. But what if the boss reacted to how we play instead? Learn our moves, when to step back, when to jump, etc. That would make for a far more immersive and emergent gameplay experience. Oh, this reads like the copy from an advert.
I mean, like, it's weird. A lot of this. Do you all remember when the Dreamcast came out? One of the like marketing taglines for it was it's thinking.
Yes.
Yeah. That was one of the things that they were saying could happen. I think that actually might have ended up, even if it was technically true, kind of being a bit of a blast processor kind of claim. They were saying like, oh yeah, like if you're playing NBA 2K1, the enemy basketball players, the other team, you know, will learn from your tactics and adjust to them. They were making it sound like it was going to be kind of exactly what Ollie says. And the fact that we're still talking about that as science fiction at this point, it makes it funnier that they were promising it back then.
Well, I think the highlights that maybe the problem is that that's actually not fun. Like, yeah. The thing in Dark Souls that makes dying to that bullshit attack that surprised you okay is you can go back and anticipate it next time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if that, you know, changes on you, if you get the rug pulled out from under you in a different way that now you can't learn from.
No.
I guess, yeah, I could see bosses evolving or responding to your proclivities for sure. But you know, it's gotta be done in a way that still feels like the player can master them.
Yeah. If it's always matching you, then that is not a difficulty curve. That is just nonsense.
Or if it's evolving by throwing new things that you can't expect at you.
Mm.
Yeah.
This was already done in the one Metal Gear game where you're attacking bases. It's like, if you shoot in the heads all the time, they start wearing helmets, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Although in that one, basically what it comes down to is you just always have your soldiers stealing helmet shipments, because headshots are basically how you play that game.
Yep. Got to go through. Got to go through, Mr. Sandman, with the with the Trank guns. Ben, what does Jeremy say?
Jeremy says, make some weird Cthulhu horror design aesthetic.
Sure. Yeah.
There was actually a game like that. I can't think what it's called, but there's one that it's all of the enemies are procedurally generated, like DeepMind stuff.
Hmm. Oh, damn. Yeah.
That sounds creepy as hell.
How better to show horror beyond the human mind than to have it not created by the human mind?
Yeah. Let's see here. Dennis, what does Peter say?
Peter says, I hope we have more representation for AI-themed characters, like Cube from Live a Live. However, I also want the characters to be uncontrollable in a party-style RPG, but unlike most computer-assisted characters, the characters would be programmed to learn from the inputs that the player makes when controlling non-AI characters. Possibly a massive stretch, but would be interesting nonetheless.
Cool.
What you're describing is almost like Black and White, where you had the avatar, animal. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, but I like the idea of, you know, when you switch away from a given person in your squad, they still play like you.
So one of my favorite things about current AI is, like, one of the secrets of it is when you choose an application, choose some application where people will, like, kind of track if it randomly goes off the rails. And so, like, Black and White, your, you know, little god thing was usually some sort of like cat or something. So if it just like started being an asshole, you'd be like, nah, that tracks.
I'll continue here. Tom says AI Dungeon is an extant interesting use of this that is still really, really janky. That's part of the charm of AI Dungeon to me. Mm. It's like a an interactive fiction slash MUD kind of game, MUD, where like all of the environments and, you know, kind of consequences and stuff are based on kind of analyzing your language and stuff. So it's kind of like having an AI DM who is giving you new scenarios to navigate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then David, what does Greg say?
Greg says, I think AI will help in making games more dynamic. That is, adjust to how the game plays the game and make changes on the fly to raise or lower the difficulty as needed and unlock different options. This will not only make each game a bit different to play, but also keep the difficulty steady all at the same time. We're seeing some of this already with games like Left 4 Dead 2 and the Dead Space remake, but there's much more that could be done. I feel like a bunch of people have brought in up difficulty. I think an interesting thing would be train an AI not with the goal to win, but with the goal to win like 80% of your games.
Yeah.
Yeah, or have some, like, you need some way for the player to input, like, I'm having fun right now.
Right.
Like, don't assume that just because they died, that was a bad outcome.
Well, I mean, once you're plugged into the Matrix.
That. Yeah. Well, like, yeah, I see after, like, Magic the Gathering Arena, it'll be like, did you have fun that game every couple of games?
Mm.
Yeah, the problem with that is I feel like once we reach enough, you know, high enough singularity for the computer to tell when you're having fun, we've probably already released high enough singularity that the computer can just hack your implants to make you have fun.
Yeah. Just turn up your dopamine thermostat.
Yeah, now every game is We Happy Few.
Yes. So I think for me, mine on this would be...
We need to refresh because I added one.
Oh, my bad. I'm sorry.
Slack. I thought to check the old Facebook page. I forgot to check the Slack.
Okay. Let's see here. I'll read this one. Ricky says, one day they might be able to make a procgen less. They might be able to make procgen procedural generation less shitty using AI. I'm not holding out hope for good games with procgen levels or anything. Just an upgrade from trash tier to mediocre.
Yeah.
If it's an incremental improvement, I'll still take an improvement.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting. Like, I wonder if anyone's tried training a level generator or something on like classical architecture or something.
I'm sure people have attempted it. Yeah. So what were you going to say, David? Was your hope for this?
Oh, so I think my hope is for the moderation software in games to be trained to recognize dog whistles.
Oh, yeah.
So that, you know, you don't have the thing where, like, you know, people will technically not be saying transphobic stuff, even mm-hmm. though they're totally saying transphobic stuff or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, or even just recognize when someone's being like generally shitty or a troll, but not in any way that like you can specifically pin down.
Yeah.
Like I had a teammate
in the Darkest Timeline. You can, you know, peg that to look at that, but then also look at, but how much have they spent in the cash shop?
Oh no. There's your DMZ story from me is, I did have one troll player that we took a quest where you need to use a Geiger counter. And it points you to a loot box that has three Geiger counters, one for each player. Mm. But this guy took all three Geiger counters and then just drove to the other side of the map.
What?
Real cool, dude.
What a dick.
Ah.
Huh.
I hope you find lots of radiation over there.
For me, it's hard to think of one that wouldn't be like a labor or ethical problem. So I will say, using it not for like character design or whatever, but in a game when there are, let's say, lots of townspeople or lots of enemies, using AI to, kind of iterate through facial designs. 'Cause like AI has demonstrated itself to be pretty good at making fake people. You know?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And each of them will have a different number of fingers.
Yeah. And as many teeth as you can count and more.
So wait, Ben, how would you feel about Days Gone if each zombie was unique?
Yeah, I wanted them to have a name as I mowed down hundreds of them.
You wanted them to yell about, oh, no, my dog.
Yeah. Chris. Yeah, except it would be more like, oh!
Oh, man. But yeah, or do you take that into like clothing or uniform design, stuff like that? Just things that would fit within the design and use pieces that the artists kind of made, but stuff that would like just be like an awful lot of providing variety for the player. That's to do it with actual brute force would just be a lot of unrewarding work. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of using using that to kind of make sure you never see the same person twice. You know, would be pretty good. Get rid of the Oblivion or Skyrim town problem kind of deal. Mm-hmm.
See, I would love that in character creation where I could put together like kind of what I wanted and then say, all right, but now make this look not hideous.
Yes. Yeah. Do like a filter pass over it to make sure it's not ridiculous.
Make it text input. So like kind of like Christian Bale,
yeah.
But then way more buff.
Ben, how about you?
I had two ideas for this. Like one would be improving like the infinite quests, like a la Skyrim, where it's like via like the text of like what the person's saying. So like have it somehow be able to generate interesting quests. But you know, all the quests are you go somewhere and you pick something up and kill some people and then come back.
Yeah.
But having that would be interesting if they could do it really well, so that like makes it more engaging. Not sure if you want to, you know, infinitely do repeatable things with your life, but you know, the other one, I don't know how it would fit into a game.
Hey, but, Ben, how's Marvel Snap going?
Yeah, sorry, I'm doing that on the side. No, Snap, it's well, I haven't talked about it, but yeah, it's the same game.
I was just talking about infinitely doing repeatable things.
Yeah, it's like
that. A random forever game.
That's a pretty apt way to describe that. You climb ladders that go to nowhere. The other one, I don't know how to fit it into a game, but like being able to AI generate like morality questions and then somehow pose those to the player.
That's how you get I have no mouth, but I'm a scream.
Well, you don't have to torture the players or anything, but God, you don't have to keep them alive forever. But
Have you seen like the new right wing kind of moral panic right now? At least a minor one is people are angry that ChatGPT or whatever answered somebody when they asked, "Is it okay to say the N word if it will stop a bomb from blowing up that kills a million people?" And ChatGPT said, "No, there's no situation in which saying it's okay." And people like Ben Shapiro, instead of being like, "Oh, well, AI is whatever," like that's a dumb question to ask, but also, yeah, just instead of just kind of writing it off, they're making it sound like it's in the system. The woke is in the system. Oh no!
can we get AI to the point that it snaps back?
I hope so.
Oh, I just like detect to your point, you mean, David.
Snaps their back.
Yeah,
really, nap like a Slim Jim. Sorry,
no comment on Ben Shapiro in that scenario. But to David's point, I'm like, can detect when people are soft trolling or acting in bad faith.
Yeah,
And then just go into like counter troll mode and just dunk on them so hard.
Give them Wendy's Twitter experience.
Yeah. How yes. long of a tweet war do you think we could get Donald Trump to go on with a bot?
Oh man.
Oh man.
Yeah, some of the bots that are just like programmed to encourage mansplaining, it is hilarious reading those threads.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that was a pertinent anecdote related.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I want to see truly branching stories. So, I think about Fallout 3, where it was like you can shoot anyone in the head, like. You know, this is completely open world. Anyone can live or die. And all of it really like directed you back to on rails of the main story as much as possible over a relatively short period of time. Usually I would love to see AI used to like, OK, well, I shot the town leader in the head. Now the game is about that. And that's going to lead me somewhere else interesting and just completely not beholden to a pre-written storyline.
That's the kind of thing that the AI dungeon can let you do.
Yeah, AI dungeon is a great starting point for that for sure. Done just in text, although it looks like they might have some image generation stuff built in now. I don't know.
It's been too long since I played.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to check it out after this. But yeah, that's mine.
Nice. Well, thanks everybody for responding. If you would like to be like them, you can go to the Duckfeed community, Facebook, group. There we go. Just do a search for Duckfeed community and you'll find it there. And those prompts will go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you so much, Dennis, for posting it.
Mm-hmm. Bonus points if you create an AI that responds to the questions.
Please don't. The end boss. Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are going on in the world of games. Let's see here. David, your story seems to be the most timely. I will throw to you. What's going on with music?
Yeah, so the composer of Assassin's Creed, Stephanie Economou, won the first Grammy for a video game soundtrack.
Nice.
So apparently it's been long running, people trying to, convince the Grammys to add this category. But this is the first time it happened.
I'd be curious to see the full list. Let's see.
Yeah. So actually they mentioned it. So other ones that were nominated were Call of Duty Vanguard, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, Old World, and Aliens Fireteam Elite.
This is, I saw somebody say this, so it's not an original thought. It's like they pulled game names out of a hat. I have never heard of Old World.
Who's best connected?
Yeah, well, the other thing for me is, so there is kind of a dumb version of what I'm going to say and maybe a little bit more intelligent version. The dumb version is, a part of me is a little bit disappointed they didn't choose something like more chiptune-y just because I feel like I don't mean this at all to be critical of the Assassin's Creed soundtrack. I haven't heard it, but like if it's the traditional like orchestral, that sort of thing, like that could be any movie's soundtrack.
You're hitting on what I was going to say, which is based on what I'm seeing here, it looks like a way to specifically reward video game music that sounds like that sounds like movie music. Right. You know?
And I feel like a better thing to do would be, like, there's tons of indie games that have, like, you know, really interesting, you know, either chiptune or, like, you know, electronic, you know, soundtracks, you know, things that aren't always at the Grammys.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so help me out here. Call of Duty Vanguard came out in 2021. How does that work?
All of these award shows are always a little bit behind in terms of, you know.
Still, that feels significantly behind.
Yeah.
Huh.
I don't know. I'm trying to see what else some of these people have done. I mean, like the composers, I mean, like two of them definitely, you know, these are big names. Like, I didn't know that Austin Wintory did the Aliens Fire Team Elite soundtrack. Austin Wintory did the Journey soundtrack.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And then Bear McCreary did the Call of Duty Vanguard soundtrack. And Bear McCreary, you know, big he did like the Mass Effect soundtrack and stuff like that. These are names as well.
I wonder if that kind of happened, where it's like, all right, what are the big names in video games? What is something that they've done that's recent enough that we can get them in the ring?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also like to know how it's evaluated too, because, like, I don't know, the Grammys is weird. Are they listening to it as like, okay, are these just like music compositions, or is it, you know, are they looking at the way that it how it plays with the actual gameplay kind of stuff? I got no idea. I don't think it's a bad idea for them to have this. I just worry. Yeah, I worry that it would be a little bit too much just like, oh, film music, but with when you're holding a joystick kind of thing.
Of all the award shows, I feel like the Grammys is one of the weirder ones, because music is so much more subjective than things like movies as far as like quality, you know, or because there's so much more preference based.
Yeah.
So the entire thing feels weird.
Yeah. Bear McCreary did God of War, the reboot in Ragnarok. And he did the soundtrack for Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power, the TV show.
Yeah. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I was mistaken about the Mass Effect. I forget who did Mass Effect. I thought that he did that.
No. There's plenty of video games on this list, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Huh. Well, congratulations to the person who won. That's cool that somebody who does work like that is able to get rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've got one that is good news wrapped in bad news. let's say at the end of this past week, and then over the weekend, there was a certain amount of panic because Microsoft had posted a big list of games that was being pulled down specifically from the Xbox 360 marketplace, and therefore was also being pulled down from like the Xbox marketplace more broadly. And this kind of came alongside what seemed to be an announcement that Microsoft would be closing the Xbox 360 marketplace entirely over the course of this year, making it so you could not buy any more 360 games or DLC by May 2023. This was posted, and it would be very bad news because that is a generation that relied a lot on digitally distributed content. Like, you may be able to find like a 50% off copy of Assassin's Creed Liberation or something like that. Trying to buy anything digital for it, you know, might be a bit of a tough putt, right? Microsoft came out earlier today, I believe, and said, no, we do not currently have any plans to entirely shut off the Xbox 360 marketplace. Instead, it is just that big list of games that is that is being pulled down. So don't worry, we're just doing this piecemeal instead of all at one time, and try not to think too hard about how all of this can go away if we decide to make it go away. Yeah, and this is alongside like the 3DS eShop closing and Wii U eShop closing. It's a weird time for stuff from that era just having the plug pulled.
Yeah, man, we got a theme going this week based on yours and mine.
Oh yeah, yeah. I should have done mine at the end so we didn't end with a bummer. But I'll stand by my choice. Yeah. let's see. We might as well segue to it, Dennis. What else is being pulled down?
Everything. Like I talked about this last week, vis-a-vis Apex Legends and Apex Legends Mobile and Rumbleverse. And several more names have gone on the list of live service games getting the axe over the past week. Most notably, Knockout City, which is a real bummer because that's a gem of a game. And then Crossfire X, which I had not heard of before today, but is apparently going away.
Those two things might be connected.
Yeah. Yes. It just feels like there's a reckoning in general and I don't know, kind of a bubble that's burst, in these live service games. And hopefully there will be some hard learnings about, hey, don't force your game to always be connected to a server that might not always be there.
Yeah.
It's sad to see any game fail, for the most part. It's hopefully these games failing will teach enough of a lesson to the industry that we stop getting this kind of crap shoveled at us.
Wait, but it's not the industry getting hurt, so why would they learn anything?
Well, that's the thing. Is pretty much every one of these that I've seen has said we will refund all purchases made during the lifetime of the game. I know Rumbleverse said that. Crossfire X said that.
Oh, weird.
Knockout City said that. So they're giving refunds to everyone. I think that the stipulation is like any purchases that are made within 2 weeks of this announcement are disqualified. So like people can't go in and just buy all the stuff in the game only to know they're going to get it back. So like, and that makes a little bit of sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what's surprising to me is that they are refunding everything that, especially for a free-to-play game, is theoretically how the game made money.
No.
And that begs the question, like, okay, well, if you're able to give refunds on this scale, you were clearly making money some other way. I imagine there was some data exchanging hands.
I mean, to be fair with the inflation, they probably still made like 10% profit.
Yeah. And you know, maybe it's one of the like the movie industry is going through this right now where there's something where it's a tax write-off if you act something at the right time. It's real producers kind of feel to it, but there's a whole bunch of movies that are getting an axe late in the game. So I wonder if that's happening here as well, where it's just like, yeah, kill the live service game, get a huge tax write off and move on.
Yeah.
So, blech.
Blech. Well,
be careful spending money on live service games, people.
Yeah. It doesn't seem very, I mean, I don't know. It depends on how you conceive of it. Are you spending money to, spend time doing an activity, or are you spending money to get something that you quote unquote
think
own?
You'll have forever?
Basically treat it like money you're going to the casino with.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to pull it up with. Like, you're walking in there with $20, you might walk out with more, you're probably going to walk out with nothing, but you will have passed time using that $20 like you would with any other entertainment.
No one can take time away from you. That is taken away automatically at a pace that no one can control.
Yes. Weirdly philosophical note to end on. And Ben, you continue to have no story?
Yes. You make it sound like this is like a week to week thing.
No.
What is time?
Ben?
I'll have a story some other time.
You had said that you didn't have a story before we started the section. Cool. Well, how do we all feel about buttoning it up?
Button them buttons.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 446. We really appreciate it. If you would like to help us out, you know the things that that you can do: Patreon, Facebook, and the Duckfeed community, ratings or reviews, telling your friends. These are all things that that we encourage. Dennis, what's going on with Deck of Wonders?
I am getting inundated with pictures of people playing it. So, hey, if that's you, thank you so much for supporting this. and I hope you enjoy the game. If you would like that to be you, the second wave of shipments are going out shortly. I've kept, like, it's the pre-order site, but now it's basically just orders. I've mm-hmm. kept that up. And there will probably be a little bit of downtime as I transition inventory from the original distributor to something else. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, you can just go to the Kickstarter, and that'll link through to the place to buy the game.
Nice. Well, I think that's I think that's everything for now. Oh, check out Jolachan's place, jolachan.com. Do not know, or yeah, jolachan.place. There we go. I do not know what the episode coming out today is, but there is an episode coming off today as of this, you know, when this is going to be coming out. Cool. I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Mastodon at Cole Ross at mastodon.social.
Oh, sweet. I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me in the Deck of Wonders Discord.
You cannot
I'm
find David.
I'm David Weissmith. You cannot find me. Sorry.
I'm Ben Merkel, and you can find me Googling what Mastodon Social is.
Oh, just a Twitter.
It's a Twitter social alike. For elephants.
They're so funny.
Do you guys hear they're bringing back the Mastodons?
Yeah.
I saw that.
Nothing wrong with that.
Should we go back and watch Jurassic Park to figure out if this is a good idea or not?
Oh, it'll be different for us. Don't worry.
Do you guys hear they're bringing back the Mastodons? Should we go back and watch Jurassic Park to figure out if this is a good idea or not?
All right. I have one title. I have It's My Jank, Don't Touch It. Ben, what do you have?
I am titleless this week. I brought no content this week. I'm so sorry.
No, you did. You brought Barotrauma.
That's true. All right, fair.
Dennis, what you got?
I have two. I have Defensive Urban Planning. And a problem bore.
That's pretty good. I have enemy basketball players.
All right.
Okay. We all got right, it. That's easy.
Yep. that's pretty good. Cool. All right. It is decided.